52 DR Oshkosh, and WGBW 1590 AM Denmark, W250 CV Green.
ABC News, I'm Jay O'Brien. In Washington, the Treasury Department launching alternative accounting measures, including stopping government pension investments, now that the $31 trillion debt ceiling has been reached. ABC's Alexis Christophorus explains.
If, for instance, you couldn't pay your household bills, what would you do? You'd have to take money from somewhere, maybe a college fund or emergency savings to pay the rent or keep the lights on, literally. On a much larger scale, that's what the government has to do right now.
The move will keep the U.S. from defaulting on its bills. A shooting last night inside an Evansville, Indiana Walmart. A former employee opening fire, chased by police through the store, exchanging shots until he was shot and killed. A local magistrate in New Mexico will now consider the charges against actor Alec Baldwin over the deadly Rust movie set shooting. Baldwin and the movie's armorer facing involuntary manslaughter charges over the killing of cinematographer Helena Hutchins. This is ABC News. The Texas Rangers now investigating the shooting of an undocumented immigrant by a National Guardsman.
Despite the presence of thousands of guns in the hands of thousands of soldiers, state troopers, and Border Patrol agents, the incident Sunday morning is only the third in which a guardsman has intentionally fired his weapon, and the first in which a migrant was wounded. The man was taken to a hospital for treatment with a bullet wound to the shoulder after getting into a scuffle with a Texas National Guard soldier.
ABC's Jim Ryan. The Virginia family of a six-year-old who shot his teacher tells ABC News the gun their son got a hold of was, quote, secured. They say he has a disability requiring a parent to accompany him to school. The week of the shooting was the first week they weren't in class with him. Damar Hamlin still faces a long recovery. That word from Hamlin's family, saying the Buffalo Bills safety still needs oxygen and gets winded very easily. Hamlin suffering cardiac arrest during a game with Cincinnati earlier this month. His team in Sunday's playoff against the same team. Jay O'Brien, ABC News.
News and talk up, down, and all around the Fox Valley. Civic Media.
You're listening to a radio station that's part of the Civic Media Network. Find more at civicmedia.us.
For Civic Media, I'm Terry Bell with this news. A fourth suspect is now charged in the killing of a Milwaukee mail carrier last month. Prosecutors say Lakeisha Duxworth lied to investigators when she told them her home security cameras were not working. They were, and prosecutors say they show Andre Cross delivering her mail. Cross was shot to death a few days later. Wisconsin voters will have their say on a proposed state constitutional amendment to give judges more discretion when setting bail for dangerous defendants. The state assembly gave final approval for the April ballot measure yesterday. Lawmakers are also putting an advisory question on statewide ballots about requirements for unemployment recipients, which are already law. In sports, Aaron Rodgers tells the Pat McAfee podcast this week he needs time to think about his future. You're listening to Civic Media, Fox Valley.
It's a new year, and because we're excited about our new and still growing Civic Media network of radio stations, it's time to do something really big. How does a $1 million advertising giveaway sound to you? Our celebration is your chance to work with Civic Media's amazing sales team, creating a radio advertising campaign promoting your business for free. Save the date. The $1 million advertising giveaway is only happening on Thursday, January 26th. Full details on our website, civicmedia.us/million.
From the kennel to the coop, whatever the season, Fleet Farm has everything to keep your animals happy and healthy. From training your pup to sit season, to mastering those retrieval skills season. From clipping your horse for competition season, to keeping the backyard birds well-fed season. And of course, loving your pets like family season. There's a reason people say, if Fleet Farm doesn't have it, you don't need it. Because we have it all. Fleet Farm. Built for real life.
Up North News Radio is Wisconsin's new choice for progressive talk about important state issues, from the team that brings you the news through social media, newsletters, and here on the radio. I'm Pat Kreitlow. Join me weekday mornings from 6 to 8 a.m.
Dueling Tangents with Luke and Brian.
I'm really trying hard not to go insane from the mind screw that is this situation. Yes. With I was going to say the GAB, but now it's the WEC, which right. was audited by the LAB, and then it's now screwed up by the GOP, and we're all SOL. Good for us. Congratulations.
Look at all those acronyms.
Yeah.
Oh. We're the winners.
Tune in for Dueling Tangents every weekday at 2.
Uh-oh, Brad's buzzed.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, he's starting with the woots. And now a speech.
I just want to say that friendship is about heart. Heart and brain. Who's with me?
Good thing is, he knows when he's buzzed.
And my brain is saying, when it's time to go home, somebody call me a ride.
Love that guy.
Me too.
Know your buzzed warning signs? Call for a ride when it's time to go home. Buzz driving is drunk driving. A message from NHTSA and the Ad Council.
Ready for our little forest adventure?
Yes!
There's a forest closer than you think. Find a park or forest near you and music inspired by nature at discovertheforest.org. Brought to you by USDA Forest Service and the Ad Council.
Fox Valley, regional and state news and commentary. For us to find common ground, Civic Media.
The Earl Ingram Show is an independent product and has a joint sales agreement with Civic Media. Enjoy.
Hey, what's happening?
Brother, what's up? This
is a big party, man.
Yeah, brother, like, stop. Right on.
That's 844-967-2789. You can text us at that same number. Good morning, Connor. How you doing?
I'm doing all right.
All right. It's Friday. That means Friday's with Sandy Williams. Sandy, how you doing, my friend?
Well, I'm doing all right. It's Friday. You're dressed in a bright orange today. Earl, looks like you don't want to get shot accidentally.
Halloween?
Well, or hunting. You know,
yeah. Well, yeah, it's pretty bright.
Yeah.
We are the drum.
Oh yeah, in fact I think I went to one of the shows of that.
You did. We are prepping for the 2023 edition of Capital Productions We Are the Drum. Next month we will certainly start our shows again, so I'm really excited about it.
What are those shows again? Just for the radio.
So it basically is a musical journey through the sojourn of African Americans in America, and it starts with when blacks were captive in Africa, and
we shouldn't talk about that on the air, Earl, because. That's a hate America thing, right? I mean, people call in and say you're trying to make us America. I know. Yeah. I'm just saying how silly.
I know.
Those phone. I'm sorry. I didn't mean to interrupt you. But the irony of us. Obviously, this all has happened, and it's something that we should be aware of. And I went to the show, and it's a beautiful rendition by a bunch of kids, right?
Yeah, a bunch of children who commit probably 3 months of working, practicing 4 to 5 nights a week, 3 months,
mm-hmm.
Almost 4 or 5 nights a week. And it is a wonderful, wonderful show, top of the line lighting and music and all of it. So I'm really excited about it. It's one of the things that I am a part of that I'm very proud of.
Well, you should be. I went to it, and it was a very moving thing, you know,
yeah.
And exciting to watch a bunch of young people who are talented and dedicated.
You know, some of them as young as 5, 6 years old.
Yeah.
So, I'm really excited about that. But I wanted to begin the show, Sandy, with it's official. As of today, it's the warmest winter in Milwaukee.
That's some more of that woke talk, Earl.
Yeah. Okay.
Now you want to talk about, I suppose you're going to say this is like related to the climate changing.
Well, Sandy, So if it's the warmest winter in Milwaukee, it's pretty safe to say it's one of the warmest in Wisconsin, right?
Oh, yeah.
And in the Midwest.
Well, and every year so far in the last decade has been warmer than the prior year on an annual average. I mean, it doesn't matter how you slice it. It certainly looks like and now feels like this month, but there is definitely climate change ongoing. I mean, it's just happening.
Well, you know, January, February, the two coldest months. We're into us today, the 20th, somewhere around there.
Yeah.
Sandy, we're almost through January. We've had one cold spell. Everything else has been almost above.
Well, you know, I'm this ice rink steward. I've talked about it before,
right.
And I look out, and it's pretty wet down there.
Yeah,
where the rink should be.
Yeah, I mean, it really is something that we should be thinking about, right? I mean, and talking about, because we know that this is not normal. The other part of it is I was reading where Lake Michigan did not freeze over.
Well, it's not that it didn't freeze. It doesn't freeze over all the way. It didn't freeze. There are waves. You know, you can go and look at the shoreline, and there's no ice. You know, the Lake Michigan is what they've said is basically ice-free.
Which they say may have create some long-term problems. We don't know because we're so used to, things being the way that they are. But clearly we're in a climate and a time, Sandy, that anybody who thinks that this is all right, that this is normal, you gotta say they don't believe in science,
well,
right?
Well, you know, yeah, I mean, the science is that, you know, if it freezes hard in the winter, we lose all sorts of potential plant diseases and diseases for our farms. Are eliminated, and things that they suffer down south, we don't have up here. Why? Because it gets cold up here. But
right.
If it stops getting cold up here, we're going to start having, essentially invasive species will be able to thrive in our climate. So it really changes things.
And economically, if those species then get into our climate, it causes all kind of havoc, right?
I mean, absolutely. The equilibrium of our system is premised on it getting cold. And when it doesn't get cold anymore, or as cold in terms of, and freezing is a very important temperature for systemic effects out there in the environment. And so, you know, that point where water turns into ice makes a big difference.
So the way our world is created, the balance of it, requires that these things kind of remain the way that they have been. Is it safe to say that?
Well, however things are, achieve a balance, okay? And so that equilibrium that we would call the balance will change. Equilibrium will change if we change our environment. And so as our environment changes, things that we have been used to will change. And it changes in the environment and changes in equilibrium are disruptive. So you end up with invasive things thriving that never thrived before. You lose all your ash trees, you know. Right?
Yeah.
The ash boring beetle came, and now we don't have ash trees.
I don't claim to be a person who understands the importance of why there are ash trees, but there's a purpose, and must have been a purpose for an ash tree.
Well,
or it wouldn't have been there.
Yeah, we got to be careful when we talk about ash trees, the way we pronounce it, I guess. That's just an example of a kind of a, but, you know, there could be, it could happen to wheat or corn
right.
or potatoes or, you know, the various environments have suffered mightily as the result of, for instance, famines have occurred as the result of equilibrium changes that affect crops.
So Sandy, with all of that having been said, for all of the deniers of global warming, what would you say to them right now if they're listening? Those who say we don't want to change fossil fuel, it shouldn't change.
Well, you know, now what's happened is people have stopped denying global climate change, and now they're saying, okay, the climate is changing, but it's simply part of the natural course of things, and human beings aren't contributing to it very much, so we don't really have to change what human beings do. However, I think science has said that the incremental impact of what human beings are doing is having an important impact at the increment, at the margin of how much climate change we're going to have. And so I don't think there's any scientific argument that can be made against the proposition that if we moderated the amount of greenhouse gas we emitted, we could moderate the rate of the climate change and at least give the globe more time to modify itself and the lifestyles of everyone as the climate changes.
And the perfectness of this system that is this globe and the scientific research and all of those things point to something that can kind of fix itself, right?
Well, the globe always, the climate always reaches an equilibrium based on the circumstances. What that equilibrium looks like and how it squares with mankind and our ability to inhabit this globe can become more difficult and more troublesome, right? So if through equilibrium we end up losing oxygen in the atmosphere, or if we get inundated totally with water, or if, you know, there's all kinds of things that could happen that could make the Earth less habitable in its new equilibrium.
Right.
And so what we have to worry about is just what kind of equilibrium is our system working towards, and how does it affect us, and how much are we affecting it in a way that is going to be troublesome for us.
So do you think those who deny this, Sandy, don't understand what it is you just said, or it's they clearly think that this is going to impact money, and that's the more important issue?
I think people conveniently decide that they disagree with it, but then the ulterior motive that they don't even understand themselves for disagreeing with it is the extent to which it will be inconvenient. You know, Al Gore had that movie called The Inconvenient Truth.
Right.
And I thought that was a very good name for it, because what is the problem with recognizing global climate change and then believing that there's something humanity can do to modify it creates a fair amount of inconvenience. It might moderate our standard of living. It might cost us additional money in today's life to make those changes. And we've all exhibited, our current mankind, at least here in America, we've exhibited this strong tendency to want to kick the can down the road to our grandchildren to solve whatever problems it is that we are creating. You know, we're big debt for them to undertake. You know, we can talk about that later. And climate, a world that is less hospitable to them in many ways, including climate. And do we want to take care of that in our generation, or do we want to kick the can down the road and simply believe that new science and new technology, things we don't currently know about, will somehow solve the problem, and it'll be convenient for us because we won't have to sacrifice?
But see, Sandy, and you and I always talk about this. This may not be imminent in your and my time span, but it's certainly going to be imminent in those that come after us, your grandchildren and great-grandchildren. And we do owe them a better world. We owe them better than what they're set up for right now.
Yeah, I mean, to be honest with you, that one of the cultural differences between us and the Asian culture, the Confucian culture is basically that we're going to sacrifice today to make our children and grandchildren better. And so that's just built into it. And we've sort of turned that on its head here in the West, here in America at least. And it's basically that we're going to thrive today. You know, it's like...
At the expense of tomorrow.
Yeah, we're going to party tonight, because who knows what's happening in the morning.
All right, listen, we've got to go to a break. 844-967-2789. You're tuned into the Earl Ingram Show. It's Friday, and it's good always that Sandy's here. Got a lot to talk about. You can join us. We'll be right back.
I was just curious as to why you called it the Paul Revere Show.
The Paul Revere Show is named this way because the poem that we all know, the famous Ride, the poem was written to rally the troops to fight slavery and fight for democracy. And so I named the show the Paul Revere Show because I thought it was the time to get on the air and talk about democracy.
The Paul Revere Show with Mark Thompson. Listen Monday, 7 to 8 p.m., always on the Civic Media app.
Rick Smith Show, where working people come to talk.
When we got back from the Working Class Heroes radio tour, one of the things that people asked is, what'd you learn? As you're going through rural America, what'd you find? Found angry people, and angry for cause. But the sad reality is they've been fed decades of outrage candy, and they're angry at the wrong people. They're angry at their neighbors. They're not angry at the very wealthy where they should be. Be sure to tune in live weeknights, 8 to 10 p.m. across the Civic Media Radio Network, and have your voice heard.
I'm 54, so it's too late to start saving for retirement, right?
Not right. Starting to save, even in your 50s, can really make a difference. At aceyourretirement.org, in just 3 minutes, you'll get a free personalized retirement plan. That's aceyourretirement.org. A message from AARP and the Ad Council.
Did you know your favorite shows and hosts are active on social media, too? Find Civic Media on Twitter, Instagram, or Facebook and be part of the conversation happening there. And go to our website, civicmedia.us, to learn more about the Civic Media Network.
Here's your updated forecast. Overcast today, with daytime highs approaching 29. Northwesterly winds, 8 to 15 miles per hour. Overcast skies again tonight. Lows dip down to about 18. Highs level off around 28 tomorrow. Cloudy. Upper 20s, Sunday and Monday. A dusting of snow tomorrow night. For Civic Media, I'm meteorologist Paul Trombley on 98.3 FM and 1100 AM WISS. Right now, 29.
Civic Media radio stations providing your news, conversations, and fun you won't find anywhere else.
A progressive voice for rural Wisconsin. WAUK 540 AM. Always streaming at WAUKradio.com.
Can join us at 844-967-2789. That's 844-967-2789. You can text us at that same number. It's Friday. That means Fridays with Sandy Williams. Sandy, it's something else that I don't really understand. And I do understand in a way. Right now, unions only make up 10.1% of the people who work in this country. The lowest rate that it's ever been.
Mm-hmm.
It's not coincidental that we and people on the bottom are where they are and that there haven't been, you know, increases in the minimum wage and other things, because only 10% of the people who work in this country are unionized. And if you take away police and fire and educators, Sandy, they've actually done a tremendous job in killing unions.
Well, I have to say that one of the effects of the loss of manufacturing in America was the loss of the union jobs that they provided. And the service industry that has become so major in the United States is not a sector that has been likely to be unionized, nor has it unionized.
They've tried.
But it's not been successful. And so, and there has been this impact. We've talked about it before. The middle class in our day of growing up,
right,
was comprised of single breadwinning households, many of whom were union employees earning then healthy union-based wages.
Maybe 30%.
In manufacturing.
Right.
In manufacturing. Now, what those high wages probably had a lot to do with the fact that union organization in the 30s and the monopoly of the United States economy provided a good vehicle for workers to negotiate incomes for themselves that were healthy and middle class, because there was no world competition to sort of beat down and to make much tougher on the other side of the table the manufacturers against whom they were negotiating, who would argue if your wages go up like that, we're gonna the only cars that will sell in the United States will be Korean, and so there's been all these factors that have come into play to cause a huge reduction in the impact of the unions.
Well, you know, union busting, that there was always right to work legislation. I remember, you know, those great union years that I was blessed to be a part of. It increased the wages of people who weren't in unions. It was kind of like the standard of what pay would be, and so it brought along other you know, hourly wages for people who weren't in unions.
Well, I think I traced this back in the earliest of the shows I was on with you, but you know, the union movement began to die with the pressure on costs that began to develop in industry in America, starting with trends that were within America. It was the leverage buyouts.
Right.
That caused the new owners who had lots of debt overriding the Detroit's squeezing costs everywhere they could, and payroll was one of the costs they could squeeze the hardest in the near term. And they began to move jobs from Wisconsin to Mississippi to right-to-work states, and then they began to move the jobs to the fringe cities in Mexico, the ones that were on border towns where we had free trade agreements. And soon they began to move abroad. And so there's been this long-term trend based on the price competition that's been introduced into the world economy and into the American economy that didn't exist in those several decades after World War II, when the only economy up and standing was the American economy. It was the only place that made things, and it was one of the only places that consumed things.
So, Sandy, I saw that firsthand in my life. I saw the company that I worked for 33 years, began by moving down to Tennessee, non-union shop,
mm-hmm.
and then from Tennessee to Mexico.
Right.
And then from Mexico, where even cheaper labor was.
Well, there was a combination. The movement to China involved cheaper labor. It also involved China being able to organize itself in a way that could present the opportunity to manufacturers for sophisticated, from a technology standpoint, assembly plants with lots of workers who were well trained and were very disciplined, hard workers. So I think American business was very surprised at the ease and speed with which they were able to obtain the advantages of the Chinese manufacturing process. Yeah. And now today, even today, if someone comes up with a new novel product and they want to get it to market quickly, they go to China, set up a manufacturing facility there through the organized processes that facilitate it there, and they within months are manufacturing it and selling it in the United States and back across the world.
So do we own the plants when we move work over to China, or do they own the plants?
Well, that's the process. You know, we talk now about how China stole our technology, but what they did, even from the beginning, is they said, you know, these plants that you have here are not going to belong to you. First of all, no one owns land privately in China. It's all owned by the government. So the physical plant, the geography that it sits on, the real estate it sits on, is owned by the state.
What about the equipment?
But then they also said this equipment, all of it's going to belong to us. So the American manufacturers knew they were giving up their technology when they went there.
So hold that thought, Sandy. I want to talk a little bit more about that. We got a lot to talk about. It's Friday. It's Friday with Sandy Williams, 844-967-2789. We'll be right back.
The show.
A fresh approach to finding common ground in the Fox Valley. This is Civic Media.
Civic Media. ABC News, I'm Jay O'Brien. In Washington, the Treasury Department launching alternative accounting measures, including stopping government pension investments, now that the $31 trillion debt ceiling has been reached. ABC's Alexis Christophorus explains.
If, for instance, you couldn't pay your household bills, what would you do? You'd have to take money from somewhere, maybe a college fund or emergency savings to pay the rent or keep the lights on, literally. On a much larger scale, that's what the government has to do right now.
The move will keep the U.S. from defaulting on its bills. A shooting last night inside an Evansville, Indiana Walmart. A former employee opening fire, chased by police through the store, exchanging shots until he was shot and killed. A local magistrate in New Mexico will now consider the charges against actor Alec Baldwin over the deadly Rust movie set shooting. Baldwin and the movie's armorer facing involuntary manslaughter charges over the killing of cinematographer Helena Hutchins. This is ABC News.
Fox Valley regional and state news and commentary for us to find common ground. Civic Media.
For Civic Media, I'm Terry Bell with this news. A teenage boy charged with kidnapping and sexually assaulting an 87-year-old woman in Waukesha faces a trial set for May. Khalil Perry pleaded not guilty yesterday. Police say he kidnapped the woman at knife point, robbed her, then assaulted her. Perry's lawyers wanted him tried in juvenile court, but the judge disagreed. There's a new chancellor in charge at UW-Whitewater. Board of Regents is tapping Corey King for the post. He's the fourth chancellor at Whitewater in recent years. Jim Henderson quit last spring. Dwight Watson left in 2021 after a cancer diagnosis. And before that, Beverly Copper left after her husband was investigated for sexual harassment. In sports, Packers quarterback Aaron Rodgers tells the Pat McAfee podcast this week he needs time to think about his future. You're listening to Civic Media Fox Valley.
It's a new year, and because we're excited about our new and still growing Civic Media network of radio stations, it's time to do something really big. How does $1 million advertising giveaway sound to you? Our celebration is your chance to work with Civic Media's amazing sales team, creating a radio advertising campaign promoting your business for free. Save the date. The $1 million advertising giveaway is only happening on Thursday, January 26th. Full details on our website, civicmedia.us/million.
I'm looking at the phone lines. I'm seeing some familiar faces. Once in a minute, Gene of Eau Claire.
Well, welcome back, Matt. I really miss you. We've been missing getting woke every morning, but now we'll keep woke in the afternoon.
Once in a minute, Andrew of Detroit.
Professor, it's so nice you're back. We missed you during your vacation, and I'm very happy to be in your class for the semester.
Thanks a lot for calling in. I appreciate all my callers.
Tune in to Matt Flynn Direct, Monday through Friday, 3 to 4 p.m.
Women hear a lot about self-care these days. Advice on ways to relax, exercise, eat healthy, and more. Those are all great. But one of the most important self-care steps we can take is making sure we're financially secure later in life. That means saving money for retirement. It's never too late to start. And it's the kind of self-care that brings peace of mind that lasts. For small steps you can take to save for retirement, visit WeSaySaveIt.org. That's WeSaySaveIt.org. A message from AARP and the Ad Council.
We've all felt left out. And for people who move to this country, that feeling lasts more than a moment. We can change that. Learn how at belongingbeginswithus.org. Brought to you by the Ad Council.
You can text us at that same number. It's Friday. That means Fridays with Sandy Williams. And Sandy, I want to just a little bit longer on this, and because, and I think maybe because it represented my life and the unions and so many more like me, and that story is kind of gone. You know, when we talk about people not wanting to talk about history and the history of things, It was so vitally important, unionism in this country. And when I look and see only 10%, the lowest rate ever for unions,
I guess, in this country. Part of my heart bleeds for, because I know people who didn't go to college and who, you know, worked and did and just were able to provide for their families. You talk about it all the time, the middle class. But that group of people who did those things and know now how fortunate we really were because things are where they are right now. And you know, and I don't know, Sandy, if we can ever go back to that time. I don't see businesses ever, you know, now they've benefited all these decades from not having that added financial responsibility. And I don't know if you call it sharing.
What you're talking about, but basically
the profits that
wages that were commensurate right. with union scale wages. Well, you know, I think what's happening, it's interesting, is we don't have a union movement that's particularly strong right now in the United States, but we have this subliminal movement ongoing right now that where workers post-pandemic are behaving way differently than they did pre-pandemic. And the labor market has become very different. And people who are employing laborers have started to behave differently because they have come to realize the value of the labor capital. The component of manufacturing that is labor was, I think, being diminished in the view of owners of business. The value of that was diminished over the past 30 and 40 years. And the notion that you could simply lay people off and that they were fungible, meaning everyone was the same. You could simply bring in new workers when you needed them, and you could lay them off when you don't need them. And they found out, manufacturers found out, and the service industry found out during the pandemic and after the pandemic that you can't necessarily find the workers you want. You can lay them off, and they can suffer that onus, the workers will, but you won't be able to find them when you need them. And when you need them, you're going to end up leaving a bunch of money on the table because you can't build cars if you have shortages, if the shortages are caused by a shortage of labor. And you can't finish houses that you're trying to manufacture if you can't find the workers and you can't find the plumbers and the electricians. And so I do believe that even absent a visible, strong labor movement right now, we have a subliminal movement ongoing of workers that is forcing a change on the part of manufacturers and employers about the importance of labor capital. And they're starting to offer training at work again. They're starting to offer and compete with higher wages to try and find them. And so I think the table is set. Whether this will result in a newfound labor movement where there will be more organization of union workers, that has begun in some,
yeah,
to some
I mean,
extent.
They're trying that.
Yeah, but to some extent, just this general change in the conduct of workers is having an effect that's quite positive for the future of workers, because I do think that employers over the past 30 years began to diminish in their minds the importance of a loyal and trained cadre of workers, and they began to think that workers could just be exchanged. You could lay them off now and you could find them later and there'd be no problem. That was easier when there were union workers who were trained and they could lay people off and then call them back. You know, but that's not the way the labor market works today. And it turns out that I think conduct is going to change. The minimum wage is, whether the minimum wage is going up, hourly wages are going up, even in recognition of this, in places where the minimum wage hasn't increased. So my hope is that this period will not be stifled. This movement towards improving the lot of workers will not be stifled by government programs trying to avoid inflation. And so far, I think that we're going to maybe avoid the recession that might otherwise result. I talked about this last week because I think there will be this tendency of employers to cling on to workers and not lay them off anywhere near as rapidly. Yes, the tech industry is laying people off quite rapidly now. First of all, those are different kinds of jobs, a different sector.
Right.
everyone knew that the tech industry had been over bullish about the way it was growing. And that seems to be the only service space right now that's laying people off. Every other space of employment has signs out saying we're hiring.
You know, I was, what is the name of the largest business entity in the state, manufacturers and commerce?
Wisconsin Manufacturers and Commerce.
So they were talking about the fact that they see a shortage of prospective workers in the future in the state. And as they create more and more jobs, there's going to be this shortage that they can't fill. And then you sit back and you wonder and you say, okay, shortage of workers, companies that can't find workers, the workers who are there should be reaping the benefits of that, which is what you're saying. But, you know, that doesn't happen overnight, right?
It's incremental. No, it doesn't happen overnight, but it's happening, and you can see it happening. You can see it in the job market. The employers started out by saying we'll offer bonuses. That was a way to avoid offering increased annual income, trying to just make it a one-time increase.
Right.
Let's pay you an upfront bonus. That didn't work very well. Workers were too smart. And so now you can see training programs developing all over the service sector. Because, you know, people are hard-pressed to find those workers, and they know they're leaving lots of money on the table because when people call, you know, when jobs are offered to them, they have to turn them down because we don't have the workers.
The service sector doesn't pay. It's not going to be paying that livable wage that we're talking about.
Well, it depends on which, first of all, it depends on which part of the service sector, and also that's based on the business model that you're aware of today. But, you know, in Europe, being a waiter, for instance, is a profession.
Right.
And it does pay a livable wage.
But
Not here yet. But that just means that going to a restaurant is going to get somewhat more expensive so that you can pay the workers there the livable wage that they need. And the same is true for other industries as well. You know, the fast food industry here in the United States has thrived because one of the reasons is because they've been able to hire people at minimum wage.
Right.
But the fact is that someone who works 2,000 hours a year and who's not a young person but in the middle of their career needs to be earning a livable wage, or we're setting the table for the United States. If we have a bunch of people in our economy who are in the middle of their income earning years and are earning something like minimum, you know, for over 2,000 hours are earning $25,000 or $30,000 a year, we're setting the table for real problems in our economy.
So it's strange that you say that, because back in August, I did a live remote at a labor event, and I was talking with a poor woman who's worked in fast food for 30 years. The most she ever made was $16 an hour.
Right.
And she was a manager.
And just so people do the math in their head, that's $32,000 a year.
At the height.
$32,000 a year doesn't, you know, I can do the math for you and show you the other costs. She probably didn't get benefits.
No benefits.
And so because her employer was probably careful to make sure that she only didn't work enough hours to get benefits. So that person, when they reach the end of their career, is basically is in a terrible position. And they've lived a life of terror, living paycheck to paycheck, at something that is, if that person has a family of any sort.
Yes, she did.
They've lived essentially below subsistence. And if they have, if two breadwinners.
And worked hard. Yes.
Yeah, and worked hard. And so we have too many, like I said, when I looked at the median family in Wisconsin, $63,500 of income and two breadwinners. That means that those two breadwinners, each of them, if they were each earning the same, is earning this $32,000 income without benefits. And that family is behind the eight ball. They cannot make it financially in the state of Wisconsin based on average costs in Wisconsin.
And that's why the safety net that you talk about and why this is so important. This woman was closer to Social Security
Oh, yeah.
Than she was to anything else.
Her income was only slightly more, or maybe even less than you would make on with Social Security. So she's lived a life without Medicare to protect her, until she gets of age, and she's earned too much money to qualify for much in the way of state assistance or state medical care. And so I just think the Congress, as they talk about this debt ceiling and where we ought to cut costs, what we ought to be talking about is what does the American family need? What does the American middle class family need? How should America be spending its money? And why don't we have daycare and universal health care, universal daycare? And why are we not setting up our workers in the United States to be at least as protected and comfortable as they are in the rest of the world?
All I could think of was this poor grandmother who was in helping to rear grandchildren and has done all the things that we ask people to do in this society, right?
Yeah.
Work.
Yeah.
Right? Through no fault of her own. She wasn't able to maybe secure a better job. You know, I've had debates with guys who say those are starting jobs and people shouldn't stay in there all their careers. It shows a lack of wanting to better themselves. That's not the case. There are some people who just don't have the capacity, right? I think.
Well, in fact, in today's world, the worker, until the pandemic, employers were looking for resumes that showed that someone had already done the work that they were going to hire them to do. If someone is working in the fast food industry when they're 30 years old and they're working the 1,700 hours a year that they might be allowed to work to keep them under the benefits level, and they're, you know, they'll be earning $25,000 or $27,000 a year, They'll be struggling to make it, but they aren't really in a position to go off and get a better job, you know. And so the workplace didn't support this notion that, and the fast food industry was even premised on the fact that these people would stay there and work. The minimum wage when I was growing up was something that you earned when you got a job in the summer when you were in college or when you were in high school.
Right.
And the minimum wage was not something that many people were earning on a permanent basis into their careers. And that changed because the business model of a great deal of America was transformed, particularly in the service space. The service space was built around having workers who earned very minimal hourly wages.
My first job paid me $1.10 an hour. And I was, 16 years old, working in a drugstore.
Yeah.
That was, you know.
Well, and the fact is that the argument used to be for, that we wouldn't increase the minimum wage because it would keep young people from getting the jobs they need, okay? That's one way of talking about it if those are the people who are getting those jobs.
Right, right. And it's not that way anymore.
It's not that way anymore. And that's the difference. And I know we've had Lou and people who've called in and who've said, and they, I think they're just thinking based on projecting their own experience from their growing up period, that minimum wage jobs are beginning jobs. But that's not, all you have to do is go around the country and in the economy and see who's doing these jobs. And there's plenty of people with graying hair doing these jobs.
All right, we've got to go to a break. 844-967-2789. It's Friday. It means Fridays with Sandy Williams. We'll be right back.
You are listening. Miss our conversations on air? Join the discussion on our social media channels. Find Civic Media on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. You can also find social media for specific shows and hosts on our website. Go to civicmedia.us.
I was just curious as to why you called it the Paul Revere Show.
The Paul Revere Show is named this way because the poem that we all know, the famous ride, the poem was written to rally the troops to fight slavery and fight for democracy. And so I named the show the Paul Revere Show because I thought it was the time to get on the air and talk about democracy.
The Paul Revere Show with Mark Thompson. Listen Monday, 7 to 8 p.m., always on the Civic Media app.
Look through your children's eyes to see the true magic of a forest. It's a storybook world for them. You look and see a tree. They see the wrinkled face of a wizard with arms outstretched to the sky. They see treasure in pebbles. They see a windy path that could lead to adventure. And they see you, their fearless guide through this fascinating world.
Find a forest near you and start exploring at discovertheforest.org. Brought to you by the United States Forest Service and the Ad Council.
Hey, son, how are you feeling?
I'm fine, Pops.
What's on your mind?
I can't explain it.
When your kid can't find the language, find the lyrics. Start a conversation at soundedouttogether.org. Brought to you by Ed Council and Pivotal Ventures.
Here's your updated forecast. High temperatures reach up to 29 this afternoon. Under overcast skies, winds out of the northwest, 8 to 15 miles per hour. Lows dip down to around 18 tonight. Overcast skies. Daytime highs approaching 28 tomorrow. Cloudy skies expected. A dusting of snow tomorrow night. For Civic Media, I'm meteorologist Paul Trombley on 98.3 FM and 1100 AM WISS. Right now, 29.
Your hometown radio, refreshed. Keeping you informed, entertained, and connected on the Civic Media Network, civicmedia.us.
Show. As always, you can join us at 844-967-2789. It's 844-967-2789. You can text us at that same number. It's Friday. That means Friday's with Sandy Williams. And Sandy, you know, you and I, especially you, but I kind of had the same inclination this morning as I was looking at, you know, the tax problems in this country, and why it is that we say we can't afford things, and why we've, you know, got a $31 trillion deficit and growing.
Well, we have $31.5 trillion debt.
Okay, yeah.
National debt. The deficit is something we run each year.
Yeah, debt.
Which
debt.
I know, I'm just trying to get the lingo right here. And you know that I think it's striking. We have this debt ceiling problem. And first of all, I don't think many people in the country or even in Washington even understand what they're dealing with, because what they're dealing with is the credit card bill. It's the family. It's the family sitting around the table. Their credit card bill has come in, and they've already spent the money, and someone has advanced the money on their behalf. The government has. And now the question is whether they're going to finance that. And they'll either finance it through taxes coming in, or when they have deficits each year, they're going to have to float some additional debt to cover the deficit, right? Because, you know, if a family spends more than they earn in a given year, they have to borrow money. Now, there's two different kinds of borrowed money. There's money that you're investing in something. So when you buy a house, you get a mortgage, and the mortgage gets paid off over 30 years.
Right.
And the reason you do that is you're going to live in that house for a long time, and if you don't, someone else will. It's a long-term investment, and to pay for it in 1 year would be very difficult. But
right.
To pay for it over its life allows you to spread the cost out over the period of your income. Then there's short-term debt. And some of that short-term debt, like in a month, you use your credit card because your paycheck doesn't come every day. And so you'll use your credit card, and you're sort of, instead of spending last month's money, you're now spending this month's paycheck when you use your credit card. And when your check comes to your paycheck comes, you pay your credit card off. And so all it's been is a short-term advance. Well, the federal government has to borrow money like that too, because during the year they only get money during the period when they're collecting taxes, and they collect the most taxes in April of each year, and then lesser taxes the rest of the time. So they have short-term borrowing. But if they run a deficit, meaning that they're going to take in less than a year than they spend, they're going to have to get long-term debt to cover that. And so then the question becomes, is that deficit being incurred as an investment in some long-term interest, or is it just some short-term kind of a cost? And some of the federal budget surely is an investment. Certainly, educating a generation of people is an investment in the future. It's an investment in their capacity to pay taxes in the future. The community will even earn a return on that investment by investing in the young people and in education and in health care. If you have good health care and wellness practices, you'll have less. So there's money that's an investment that justifies incurring long-term debt in order to support it. But we ought to be having a discussion like that in Washington as we sit around and figure out what this long-term debt ceiling ought to be. First of all, it ought to be automatically approved because it's only to cover expenditures that the legislature has already authorized and have already been made. So this is the credit card bill, okay? And if you don't pay it, you're going to pay a lot of interest, a lot of extra cost by deferring it. And deferring it is only putting off the poison. You're going to have to pay it. And if you keep doing this, that amount that you have to pay and that you get in arrears on gets worse and worse. We all understand how that happens. So what we ought to do is we ought to be talking about how we should be spending money in the future and how much of it is an investment in the future that deserves being covered by long-term debt and how much of it isn't. And what's, I think, the problem with the current discussion is we aren't discussing that. The other thing we aren't discussing is revenue. You know, I've heard discussions now on every channel, left and right, in terms of their perspective, and nobody is talking about the notion that an increase in taxes is another way to improve, to reduce deficits. And that ignores the fact that the tax reductions in the first decade of this century, as well as under Trump, substantially reduced revenue, and that if the Trump tax reduction, in fact, had not been adopted, revenues today would be considerably larger than they are. We wouldn't have reached the debt ceiling today like we did, or yesterday. We would be forecasting it for years in the future because our revenue side would have been materially higher. But no, we reduced the taxes during a boom period, and during that boom period, we had a $1 trillion deficit the year after that tax reduction. And clearly a significant portion of the $1 trillion deficit was attributable to the tax deduction. I can't tell you the amount, but it was a material amount. And so taxes would be materially higher today with more taxes. And revenue would be materially higher. And we should be talking about that. We should be talking about what kind of a tax code, what kind of tax arrangement should we have in place to give us the revenue required to make the investments we should be making and what kind of debt should we have to cover the long-term investments we should be making. And for instance, I believe that there is an investment that is involved with universal child daycare and with universal health care. And those kind of things warrant potentially increasing the deficit in order to cover them. But we ought to be looking at our revenue side as well and what our tax code is.
But, so we're about to go to a break. But, Sandy, I do remember distinctly the argument, the debate before passing that tax break for the wealthy, that the outcome of what would happen. It's not like they weren't aware that this was going to be a problem because it was brought up in the debate.
Well, except the people debating it also had reiterated the trickle down. Don't worry, this right. in the long term, this will increase revenues because the economy will boom so much that we'll have more revenue coming into the tax coffers.
Did they really believe that, or didn't really care?
Oh, you know, I think some people believe it.
It had to be one or the other.
No, I think wish fulfillment can create a great deal of optimistic thinking, and it's wishful thinking, and it's also consistent with greater prosperity.
Yeah. But we had seen trickle down economics before that didn't work.
Well, there's always been those who've been willing to argue those who have this wish fulfillment. Oh gosh, maybe it did work out. You just aren't looking at it right.
All right. We've got to go to a break. 844-967-2789. We'll be right back.
Ain't no reason to holler. That's what the sign said. It ain't coming back, y'all.
It's a new year, and because we're excited about our new and still growing Civic Media network of radio stations, it's time to do something really big. How does $1 million advertising giveaway sound to you? Our celebration is your chance to work with Civic Media's amazing sales team, creating a radio advertising campaign promoting your business for free. Save the date. The $1 million advertising giveaway is only happening on Thursday, January 26th. Full details on our website, civicmedia.us/million.
This is Pat Greitlow from Up North News Radio. On the air, online, or on demand, make it a point to catch the first word on Wisconsin news, sports, and more weekday mornings from 6 to 8 all across the stations of the Civic Media Radio Network.
You're listening to WISS 1100 AM Berlin, W252 DR Oshkosh, and WGBW 1590 AM Denmark, W250 CV...